Listening to the sweet spot for the Desert Classic. I'm your host, Roto Juan Mike Alexander. Joining me, as always, Alex Ramazowski. What's going on, Alex?
Not much. Good to be back. Looking forward to hopefully having a good secondary event on the PGA Tour that we're kind of being forced to pay attention to.
Yeah, so you know, full field, but not the quite the star-studded field that it could be as we come into the latter part of the beginning swing here. And bear with me, everybody. I got a little bit of a chest cold, still fighting it, so I kind of got the the deep voice going tonight.
It's that time of year.
Yeah, it kind of sound like Barry White. But so yeah, we're gonna jump in. You do a little course preview for us, Alex, and then we'll hit the tiers and try to keep this baby short and sweet, like we've been doing. So go ahead and let us know what we're dealing with here with the three different courses.
All right, so we got the Desert Classic, formerly the Career Builder Challenge, and formerly something else and something else over the last many years. It's always been probably not the strongest field year after year. Coincides with the Abu Dhabi Classic, which is overseas and an extremely strong field, which is interesting, but this is the PGA Tour and that's what we follow and that's what the feature DFS contests are on. So this is what we're doing. But all things considered, it's not really that bad of a field, and it should be an interesting tournament. It's, like you said, three different courses. So it's one of those events. Always fun to attempt to decipher what to dig into on a week like this. We're in California now, so done with the little mini Hawaii swing there. So we're on the West Coast swing officially. The main course, I believe they call it the host course, is the TPC Stadium course at PGA West. And there's two others, the Nicholas course, La Quinta Country Club, and the PGA West Nicholas course. So each player is going to play one of the three courses, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday is going to be the stadium course. Stadium course is, by a significant margin, more difficult than the other two. So if you're going to be digging into stats, it makes sense to look at stats that fit the stadium course, because if they're making it to Sunday, that's where they're going to be playing, and it is the more challenging course of the three. It's a pro-am, which is also something that I guess you can consider, but there's only so much considering you can do on that front. So those first 3 days, there's kind of like an alternate tournament going on where they're going to be playing with some celebrities. Some people will bring their guest with them. Some people, I don't know if everyone has someone with them or like what the situation is, but if you're kind of following it from a DFS standpoint, you're really not going to make any difference other than mentally and for the actual players out there. Do you have anything to say on that?
Yeah, on that with the program, it's just a little bit more of like the schmoozing. You know, you're not as focused on golf the whole round. So that's something to keep in mind if you wanted to look up guys who've done well at pro-ams like Pebble Beach, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's exactly like Pebble Beach. And year after year at Pebble Beach, you still see the best players coming out on top, other than maybe Ted Potter last year, which was interesting, but he dueled his way to the end with DJ, and they had their guys with them there. So it is something you could think about. The stadium court's a PTI design. They're all short. They're all under 7,200 yards, closer to 7,000 yards, all par 72s. And honestly, when you compare the cards, it's surprisingly similar, especially the alternate two courses, I guess you can call them, La Quinta and the Nicklaus course. Every course has four par threes, four par fives, 10 par fours. So nothing, there's no huge variation. Something I did notice was all of the birdies are coming on the par fives, except for pretty much what is making the stadium course harder is that it has a very difficult par five that people aren't birdieing as much. So you're going to get more birdies at the other two courses, and it's based on basically easier par fives. And I don't think there's really too much to dig in to beyond that. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, just on the three courses, there's been some chatter on Twitter and a couple of shows that starting out, not on the stadium course is the way into a top 25 or a top 10. Last year, no one who started on the stadium course was a top 10, and only four out of the top 25 started on the stadium course. The reason into that, if you do a little deeper digging, which golf gurus on Twitter did, they looked at it and they said, okay, well, let's see why that is. It's because no good golfers are starting at the stadium course. You look at their world rankings, their DraftKings pricing, they're all outside of like the 9,000 and above range. Their world golfing ranker is a good bit lower. Basically, it sounds like the TV schedule, the way they want to line it up, they've got guys not starting on the stadium course. So I think other than being, starting at the stadium course being indicative of you not being a good golfer in the field, there's not a particular advantage unless we were to get wind on one particular day, which the forecast doesn't look like any of the days are particularly going to be windier than the other. Little rain on day one. So that's somewhat of a disadvantage, on top of being not the best golfer. So I don't think it's the wrong decision to fade stadium course guys day one. With all that being said, I just, if there's somebody you're sold on, don't let that discourage you, if they're there.
Yeah, I actually love that you pointed that out because that kind of blew my mind a little bit, even though it makes complete sense. I did a lot of digging. Just if you're someone who's placing outrights or first round leaders or anything like that, if you can get a pretty significant advantage in tournaments like these, betting first round leaders. I love doing it. I was on the right page with the previous multi-course tournament over the fall to winter swing there and left Charles Howell out of it. But if you're going to be betting a first round leader, I would highly recommend choosing the non-stadium course. You're going to get the better players, first of all, so probably worse odds, definitely worse odds, but you're going to see, I'd say there's a 95% chance that the first round leader comes from the two courses that are not the stadium course.
And then my only other thoughts are, it sounds to me the things I care about. Have you played recently? So played in January or late December, which there's not a lot in December. So really, it's did we see these guys in Hawaii, or do we have any other kind of information saying that they're particularly active with on the golf course? And then have they gotten a top 25 here in the past? Those are two things that I think are fairly indicative of guys that are going to be top 25 this week.
Yep, I agree.
So let's jump in here at the top, the 10K and above tier. We've got two big studs in Jon Rahm and Justin Rose, but then the rest of the tens are not guys we're used to seeing: Patrick Cantlay, Charles Howell, and Adam Hadwin. Let's take it with the two guys at the top. Give me your thoughts on them, and then we can hit the other three.
Yeah, I mean, like those two, Jon Rahm, Justin Rose are definitely a step above anyone else in this entire field. And you're going to have to choose one or the other or neither. That's what it's going to come down to, in my opinion. You got John Rahm, who has the experience here. He won here last year, clearly likes it. He's been playing great. He deserves the 11-6 price. That it's like the DJ price we see week after week. And I mean, it's easily by far your best bet in this tournament. Justin Rose is great, and there's no saying he's not going to win, but if you're going for someone you can confidently say is going to finish toward the top, if not win, it's Jon Rahm.
Yeah, I mean, Rahm checks all of my boxes, and Rose checks is like none of them. Rahm's won here. He was good at the Century. He's good with driver. Not that Rose is not good with driver. He is, but Rose hasn't played. He's never played here, at least recently, from what I'm seeing. And then, he's also dealing with he changed clubs over the winter, is what I'm reading, and that kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies a little bit for somebody who could be working the kinks out. That said, you're never probably going to see ownership this low on Justin Rose unless it's a stacked field like the Masters.
Definitely, definitely true. Yeah.
So then, out of those other three guys, for me, Cantlay's a pass. I know he was hot in the end of the fall there, but he's just same thing. He's not. He hasn't played here in a long time. He's never played well here. He hasn't played recently. Are you on Cantlay at all?
Cantlay is always one of those guys that I feel like people, over the last 12 to 18 months, people have, like, he's reemerged. He is somewhat polarizing in that he seems to do well in a lot of big events. This is not a big event. He hasn't played here in the past 5 years. We haven't seen him in a long time, and he's priced at 10-6. So I am in agreement. I think it's an easy fade at that price.
And I mean, he's going to be owned too because of that hot swing. People are going to hunt the game logs, and they're going to see, the top tens and just put him in, thinking he's a top golfer, which even in this field, I'm not sure he is. Hadwin is an interesting case. He is like Mr. Desert Classic. His history here, third, second, sixth, and then 48th in the last 4 years. Says he likes playing here, that there's a big Canadian contingent this time of year on vacation. So he's a guy that is going to be chalky. And we're not used to seeing a 10K, but any interest?
There's definitely interest in there. I don't like the 10K by any means, but his past 3 years at this tournament, combined with his pretty decent overall play from more so the end of last season, I think he's definitely someone you could start your lineups with. I think it's going to be maybe a bit iffy if you try to pair him with anyone priced above him. So I think it'll be interesting to see what his ownership is at, having such good course history. I feel like some people only look at course history. If you're really not digging into stuff, that's one of the easiest things, the easiest stats to go look at. And if people notice 3-2-6 over the past 3 years, that's where people are going to start their lineups. So it's you gotta make your decision there, but I think it's not a bad play by any means.
Yep, and then same thing with Hal. He's a good cash option, even though he's pricey. He's done well here. He's finished second a while back. Lots of top 20s recently, and he played really well in Hawaii as usual. So he's in the his good part of the year to use him. So yeah, can't overlook CH3 up there.
Yeah, he'll probably finish top 10 like last week, chances are. Just because that's what he does. So, that's expensive though.
All right, then we get into the nines. Some interesting names in here. I'm gonna let you take first crack here at the nines. You tell me who you've got on your list.
As much as I would like to start with Phil Mickelson, I'm not gonna. I got Chez is he's been my guy, and he is playing fantastic. He was like holing out left and right last
Yeah, what
week.
was it, three of them?
He holed out on three par fours in one day. It
I don't
was
know if you can
like
count on that to continue, though.
that's kind of the little a little asterisk there.
And he's going to be popular.
Definitely, it definitely hard to duplicate exactly what he did, but there was kind of like some chatter about him that he was in form, and I don't know if I like that or not because he was in my lineups one way or another. But he's clearly playing well. He plays well at this time of year often. He has played this tournament the past 3 years, seems to do pretty well every year. And I'd say his T36, T12, and T17 the past 3 years, you kind of tack on to what his elevated level of just what he's doing right now. And I think he's a very good play. I don't like seeing him at 9,200, but that seems to be a theme with this field. So I think as we're discussing this price range, he's kind of popping out for me. But as we move down, you're going to notice that there's really some names in this field that you might wonder why they're priced so low. And maybe lineup construction will lead you away from him.
Yeah, Phil, it's a strictly GPP play at this point, especially in his career. I think we're going to see more bad weeks out of Phil than good ones. Chez, on the ownership he's going to garner coming off of that T3, I wouldn't go full fade, but I'd probably be underweight on him. Get my guy Andrew Putnam at the top there at 9-7. As much as I lead the Andrew Putnam bandwagon, I'm not gonna go overboard on Putnam this week. I'm definitely gonna use him some. It's 9-7 for a guy who's, he's the sixth most expensive golfer. That's not a territory that he probably should be occupying. But that said, he's playing really well right now. The ownership is probably not going to be super heavy on him because of that price and people just not used to seeing him there. But it could be a recipe for some trouble. Two guys I'm really interested in here. Aaron Wise, he was a lot of people were all about him to start the Hawaii swing there and just kind of average results. And here he's last year he was 17th, previous season 34th. So like nothing's remarkable about him, but he is a young guy. He's got at least, he's more in the positive field for the things we're looking for. So if he's going to take a jump, I could see it being this season. He's good with the driver. And then speaking of guys who are good with the driver, you got Luke List. Luke List is either going to top 10 or miss the cut. So use him accordingly.
Yeah, I actually kind of like Luke List here, having seen him in some fields over the past couple months. He was playing real well and finished T4 at the RSM, and that was back in the States. I think he was over in Europe for a little bit, playing in a couple events, also finishing well. So I'd say he's closer to in form than some of the others in this field, and 9,000 is a pretty damn good price.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe one of the new PGA rules was that if you damage a club, you're allowed to continue using it as long as it doesn't pose a safety hazard.
Wow, you know what? I actually did not know that. So you can snap your putter and use the half of
I think that constitutes a safety hazard, but it's like List,
it.
if you recall, in the World Golf Classic, he bent his putter like slightly, and he had to putt with his lob wedge the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Ironically, slightly better than with his putter, for at least for
Yeah,
a
it's funny
stretch
how
there.
that works out. Someone last year who did that, they went from like a 5 iron to a driver to a wedge, and they were just like draining every putt. I
Yeah,
can't remember who that was.
hitting it all hard on a line and just going to the bottom of the cup. But yeah, so List is definitely a guy that's all or none. But the conditions seem good for him. The weather seems like it could be a plus, for guys who have the big stick. All right, jumping down to the eights. Not too many of the usual names here. The Matt Kuchars of the world we're used to seeing. Partially because guys are bumped up, partially because they're just not here this week. You got your guy Sung Jae Im down there at 8,100. He acquitted himself well last week. I'd be back in on Sung Jae.
I me too. Me too. I love the price. I feel like nobody's talking about him anymore, which is really cool because I feel like people are going to be looking at Putnam. People are going to be looking at Reavie. People will obviously be up there with Rahm and Rose and probably have to jump down a little further into the eights. So I feel like he could get overlooked. And if he does what he did last week, maybe a little better, gets us a top 15, a top 10, you're going to be happy. And so I really do like that play.
Yeah,
Another guy
I think he stats
right
out
around
well
him.
for this course as well.
Yeah, the par fours. I think that's what I mentioned last week with him. I'm actually looking at, as always, oh, I didn't know how to spell his name. Yeah, it's, oh, CT Pan is,
CT Pan.
I typed in SUNG search, and actually CT Pan came up first, so he's ranked in this current model I'm looking at a little bit higher, but both actually statting out really well. I was gonna mention CT Pan and Hudson Swafford, who I don't like talking about Hudson Swafford, but he won here in 2017.
Yeah, he's going to be the chalk. 8,300, previous winner, coming off of a T3. He's absolutely going to be the chalk. But at 8,300, it's one of, we have this conversation all season. Can you afford to fade these guys? Everything that lines up for him, I don't know that you can afford to fade a guy that's 8,300 and could be top 10 easily.
If you play DFS the way I play DFS, you can afford to fade
I'm usually there with you. If you tell me a
him.
guy has ownership, he's a fade. Like it's almost always a lock for me, but I'm trying to approach that a little bit, at least smarter, not just auto fading guys for having ownership. Because
Yeah.
we're going to see some of them hit. So he might be the chalky guy that I'm okay with.
You will definitely see some of them hit, and honestly, it's proven that you can have five chalky guys in your lineup if you have that one that's 2% owned that goes on to finish top three. That can make all the difference if your chalky guys perform like chalk should perform. So it's really whether or not he's gonna wear the tag of chalky appropriately, which based on last week, he surely should.
Not a lot else to mention in the eights. The guy rounding out the eights, Bo Hosler, might be the last person I would consider, given that he's, a big boy. He could hit the ball far, and he was 20th here last time he played. So some interest in Bo. Hasn't
Yeah, and
played
he
lately,
got
but.
his first win last year, and it was at a similar style event, similar field. So it could happen. I don't love it, but 8,000 is not too shabby for him.
All right, then let's attack the sevens because it's a huge range. There's some names in here, some chalky names, some names that you maybe haven't considered. I'm gonna kick it off with some Brandon Steele, 7,600. He's got pretty good form here. Two top 10 finishes with a second being his best, a 20th, 34th. So definitely some history here. He's usually good on the West Coast swing. Big driver. Hasn't played lately, but that maybe hasn't bothered him in the past. So he's a guy I'm gonna definitely work into some lineups.
I don't hate it. I personally, number one in the sevens for me, I have just been on him for a little while now. Every time I really can get on him, I'm not sure again about ownership, but Harold Varner at 7-4, awesome price. Awesome price for what we know he can do. Again, it's kind of breaking the rule of played recently and has played here slash played well because he's missed the cut 3 years in a row. But I kind of love that ownership wise, hopefully, because he tends to get a little chalky sometimes.
You said Harold Varner?
Harold Varner, yep. And
Yeah, some ownership on him looks like down there.
he went through,
But he's a real
honestly,
big hitter, correct?
He can be, yeah, but he is also, like, stat wise, what I'm looking at right in front of me. Sixth in the field over the last 36 rounds on par fours. Seventh I'm looking at two proximity stats in front of me, 125 to 150, 150, 175. He's seventh and 11th in those two. The guy can putt for pretty well compared to most. I don't want to call him like a great putter. And then par five scoring is going to be very important here. And he's kind of a long ball hitter. I just think 7,400 is a very good price. And with the three missed cuts in a row, I think hopefully people notice that and get scared away. But we know he's kind of like gone over a hump in the past year where he went from like pretty consistently missing cuts. Like it got ugly for a while there, and then he kind of like broke through and had an awesome finish to last season. So I really like that play. I wouldn't be surprised if he's north of 10% owned, maybe closer to 15 though.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Another chalky guy down here that could approach 20%, Corey Connors, 7,500, T3 last week, so that's driving it. His best finish here is 50th, I think. I'm not sure I'm on board with chalky Connors. He does look like he stats out well for the course.
Yeah, he's gonna get noticed because of last week. Then again, like we were on Putnam and we've been on Putnam and then he does what he did. Connors is a guy I know we talked a lot about last year. Getting his card full time, half time, sponsors exemptions, whatever, and like he's back, he's here, he's clearly playing well and he's priced well, but he, like you said, chalky Corey Connors.
Yeah, a little scary. You got Jason Duffner, the Duff Man, who I think finally has a hat sponsor, which saddens myself and I'm sure you as well.
It sure does. It really does. I notice that.
He missed the cut last week. He's won here before, but generally more bad than good at this course. But that's kind of Duffner's game. You're just going to come out of nowhere and win a tournament.
Very unpredictable.
The real conundrum for me in this range, Bill Haas at 7,400. Missed the cut last time out, but he's got a 17, a 9, a win, a 6th. Like, definitely has played well here. He did not play well last year. We kept chalking that up to the car accident he was involved in, where his friend had died early in the swing. I think it was at the Genesis. But I don't know if he's just getting older and maybe the wheels were coming off last year anyway. Seeing that he missed the cut here, which is an event he had historically done well at, which was prior to the car accident. So I don't know what to do with Bill Haas. And any thoughts on him?
Bill Haas is kind of a fade in my book until he shows me I should do something different. And I think I'm comfortable with keeping it there for now. But he's a good golfer, and he is one of those guys that you would think would make a lot of sense for the course. He won in 2015. It's like he kind of hit a wall there, the 3 great years in a row, and then the whole situation last year. But it almost seemed like he was kind of losing it a little before then anyway. And I think he is very capable of performing like very, very well here. But I think for now, fade for me. And it's going to stay that way until he shows me something.
Sometimes that's a smart way to play it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm trying to be smart.
Yeah. So I'll give you my last guy, and then if there's anybody else in the sevens you want to mention, Harris English. Definitely a guy who hits the ball hard. He was, got an 11th and a 30th here. 22nd last time we saw him. So not, you know, again, not jumping off the page, but a guy who has got the right formula, and for 7,200, you could do a lot worse. So I'm going to definitely work some Harris English into some GPP lineups.
Yeah, I would definitely consider him a GPP play. He's one of those guys that kind of like scarred me over time, and I kind of gave up. With that said, there's kind of like in these fields, we know I have those guys that just kind of are like the weak field guys for me. I started off with Harold Varner. I love him at his price. There's a few others that go around him. I'll start on the high end. There's a chunk of three players here. My kind of the top two here in order, Joaquin Niemann and Dylan Fratelli. Joaquin Niemann, I'm just evergreen on Joaquin Niemann because I've kind of been, I think he's gonna be a thing.
Yeah,
and
big
I think
hitter.
He's a ball striker. He hits the ball pure. You see him. He's playing. We haven't seen him in the past few weeks, but if you follow him at all, he's out there and he's grinding, and it's definitely what he's looking to do is come away with a win, and I would bet that that will come this year. There's not much beyond that to really back it up, other than the fact I think he has some real talent. Dylan Fratelli, I was kind of randomly on him last week. I just know him from just knowing him, and he was decently priced last week, and he ended up in a couple of my lineups, and he was looking real good. He ended up T51. I think that had to be a Sunday downfall there. So 7,500, it's interesting, but he's kind of on the same page as me as same page for me as Siwoo Kim, who kind of broke my heart last week. But he's another guy that I love at these shorter courses based around par fours and the kind of 150 to 175 proximity approach, drain some putts kind of golfer. And he was doing it. He looked like he was going to make the cut, and I was actually confident with him and Kevin Tway, another golfer I really like, and missed the cut by one stroke. So he played here in 2016, finished T9. Is someone to keep in your mind, a tournament play. And then very quickly at the bottom of the sevens, I will name three players, Jamie Lovemark, Sam Ryder, and Ryan Armour. I'd say Lovemark and Ryder are still kind of two of those guys that I'm just bullish on more long term. And then Ryan Armour is someone who just has, like, for 2 years straight fallen into GPP lines for me and sometimes, like, pays off out of nowhere. So, and I like him, and he's been playing very well. He's got his past three starts have all been top 22.
He's always got a decent shot at making the cut.
Yes. Yeah, he's like a good, like, final person that you can feel good about.
For some huge salary relief, typically.
Yes.
Okay, two guys that you didn't talk about that I did want to hit on, so I kind of lied. You've got Jason Kokrak, you know, guy who hits the ball a mile. He's got an eighth, a missed cut, a 48th, a missed cut, and an eighth. So nice symmetry to that.
Sounds about right.
But, you know, I'm really on guys with driver this week because of the calm conditions.
I'm glad you're doing this for me.
Yeah. So I'll play a little bit of Kokrak, you know, in a wild lineup. But it's just my thinking is that, you know, if you could pay 7,100 for Kokrak or Luke List's price for basically the same golfer, like maybe Kokrak is the smarter play. And then
Yeah.
you've got down at 7K, Kevin Streelman, a guy who can hit the ball hard. He used to be in like the safe cut maker weekly lineup. Did not finish the season well, or I guess start the season well. He's only made two out of the last five cuts. After the Safeway, he's got a whole bunch of missed cuts. Not sure what happened there. I don't know if you have any insight on that, but I'm probably willing to give him a chance here after a little bit of a break, and just as a kind of a cash play, salary relief, he's an interesting option to me.
Yeah, you know what? I actually do not hate that at all, considering his course history here, because, like you said, he was like a staple on the cash make the cut safe list for the better part of last year and even like the previous year. And he was always like such a cash play, and then something just went kind of wrong and he stopped making cuts, and it was strange, and his salary dropped like crazy. He's like your kind of typical like 8,100 kind of guy, 79 to 8,100, like put him in there, make the cut, move on. So I kind of like that. Kokrak, he's a bomber. He will finish top five sometimes, and he will just like shoot a 78 or an 80 every once in a while. So it's a coin flip with him, but again, two guys with course history at least there to back them up. And if we're talking bombers, another guy that I have been following a little bit would be Denny McCarthy, who's 7,400. I don't love the price, but he hits the ball very long too. He's one of those recent web.com graduates that I've been so into. And he's got some real skill too, so someone to watch out for. Low ownership tournament play, possibly.
Gotcha. All right, what about a punt? You got anybody in the sub seven range on the tip of your tongue?
Am I? Oh yeah, look at that. The tout's favorite play of last week, who we have been on for years now. Not really years, but Dominic Bozzelli is back in the field, which I did not see coming because. Honest, like he was on TV as he putted out on 18 with another Sunday, a little bit of a Sunday choke. I hate to say it, but he was T5 going into Sunday, and he's priced down to 6,400 now. So I actually don't know what his exact situation is, but he's in the field at least tentatively. I mean, I would double check before putting hundreds of dollars on him or anything like that, but the kid can play for 3.5 rounds, and it's brutal to watch, especially knowing the situation. But they said he's moving to a temporary limited card status with not finishing top five. So, I mean, he appears to be here again, and this again seems to be one of those courses that would play well for him.
For me, Sam Burns, I'm a Sam Burns fan. He's not really in form at the moment, but that could change. In this field at 6,900, not the worst punt down there. And then
Yep.
Brandon Harkins, an
Yep,
interesting
that's
name
I
here.
was just looking at him.
Yeah, he's got the eighth here, and he's played recently, so checks those boxes for me.
Brian Stewart,
And
6,900, played very well last week, and I actually had him in a couple lineups, believe it or not.
he's
Missed
got
the
top
cut
tens
three
here.
out of his four here. He does have a top 10 here. Does he have more than that? I only have in front of me back to 2014.
I got a top 10 in my notes as well, or just a T10. So, in addition to the fifth.
All right. Well, I mean, he's definitely someone to consider there. I don't hate that at all. He looked good last week.
All right, let's do a couple one and done picks. I'll kick us off with a wild card, and I'll say Brendan Steele. I think if you're in a bigger field, it's going to be not the most popular pick. Get you some leverage there for a guy who could definitely win some money this week, and you're probably not looking to use him too often. You know, on the West Coast here is generally where you want steel.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah, I like the West Coast. Like, it is so much different. I didn't mention that in the course breakdown there, but people who can play on the West Coast, it's definitely a thing. Like, the grass is different. The ground is different. That everything is so much different than the people who play in Middle America and then the East Coast more often. So a lot of this is proven for a lot of guys, and you'll see it through their history at some of these courses. One and done is, God, it's such a mind.
There's not a lot of money to be won this week, so you kind of have to be careful with who you use.
Yeah,
Adam
yes.
Hadwin would be the other guy that I'd mention. Just, you know,
The...
he's got such good history here.
Yep, see, Adam Hadwin and then Harold Varner was another guy in my head, but like the missed cuts don't bode well for a
Right.
one and done. And then I also think he's got the potential to maybe show us that he's capable of a little more than that. So I would probably move on to someone else. God, this is like, I don't want to give out just like a terrible suggestion here. You could get rid of someone like a Hudson Swafford with
That'd be a
good
great one and done
form.
pick, yeah.
Yeah, good form, great course history, and I would imagine the good form isn't going to last forever. Just, yeah, that's my pick there. Hudson Swafford, love it.
Nice. All right, that's what we got this week, guys. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Roto underscore Juan. Alex is at Donald Remezowski. You can sign up for Lineup Logic at patreon.com/lineuplogic. $10 a month gets you the cheat sheet, the tools, the Slack chat, all those nice things that you want to have as a DFS player. If you want to do us a solid, go ahead and rate, review, subscribe, wherever you're listening to this podcast. It goes a long way for a podcast that you're getting for free. So we would both appreciate that.
Yes, we would.
But otherwise, good luck this week and may the sports be with you.